Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Today, the second half of Michael Peretti's classic 1999 talk titled Globalization, the New Imperialism. I hope you'll stay tuned. Last week, in the first half of his classic talk, Michael Peretti brilliantly argued that the whole purpose of imperialism is not national glory. The purpose is enriching big corporations. This week, he brings us up to date on the new form that modern imperialism takes, which is so-called free trade economic treaties. Far from glorifying the imperial nation, these treaties destroy the power of all national governments to regulate corporations and restrict corporate plunder. They damage the imperial nation just as much as they damage everyone else. Peretti talks about NAFTA and GATT, two powerful anti-democratic global trade agreements put in place in the 1990s. Today, the Obama administration and the corporate rulers it serves are crafting yet another one, in secret, the TPP, or Trans-Pacific Partnership. They're not only doing it in secret, they're also trying to give it fast-track status. That means that Congress will not be able to amend the agreement in any way, only approve it, which they will. So much for democracy. The more some things have changed since Peretti spoke, the more they have stayed the same. Here is Michael Peretti.
Imperialism today is now beginning to go by another name, and the name is globalization. Colonial oppression came with the Gatling gun, the gunboats, the missiles, and all of that. But there's another instrument used, and that's the pen and the treaty. And what we have is the North American Trade Agreement, NAFTA, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, GATT. When I was a kid, I used to watch the old gangster movies. A GATT was a gun that you held to somebody's head to extract from them. It's a very good acronym, because that's indeed what GATT is. These are international agreements that have one thing in common. They're designed to dramatically increase the power of transnational corporations while undermining consumer and environmental protections, labor unions, and most of all, democratic sovereignty. What we are facing with the World Trade Organization, WTO, is a silent coup by international monopoly capital, a silent global coup. It's presented to us as, a neutral, natural process. We're going global. The economy is just global. In the early days, economies were local. Then they became regional. Then they became national. And now they're just international. And we've got to, just get with it. Well, NAFTA has brought a 50% increase in the number of maquiladora factories south of the Mexican border, plants that batten on poverty wages, child labor, miserable work conditions. Many Mexican children don't attend school despite the compulsory attendance rule. Since NAFTA, incomes of poor Mexicans have been cut by 50%. Poverty has spread from 30% to 50% of the population, and maquiladora profits have skyrocketed. NAFTA and GATT have also brought a precipitous rise in toxic wastes and other environmental devastations. The World Trade Organization is an international body made up mostly of corporate executives and lawyers, elected by nobody, self-appointed, unaccountable to no one, meeting in secrecy, no conflict of interest restrictions against them, who now have the right to veto any law passed by any country in the world if it in any way infringes on the interests of corporate capital investment. That's a rather remarkable thing, isn't it? That's a staggering thing. So you see, the important thing here is what's lost is not this will undermine all our good environmental laws, our good consumer protection laws, this will undermine our labor protection laws and all that. Good laws have often been repealed and rolled back, and then you fight and you try to get them back in, or better laws or whatever. This will undermine our very sovereign right to have such laws, you see. That's a whole different quantum leap. What they've done through this subterfuge of international agreement is create a pseudo-global oligarchy super powerful, which now has supreme power, unaccountable to anybody. I'll give you some examples. In its first ruling in 1996, the WTO responded to complaints from Brazil and Venezuela by overturning a section of the U.S. Clean Air Act that prohibited the import of contaminated gasoline. They said that prohibition was a non-tariff restriction on trade. So our sovereign right to have a clean air bill has been overruled by this group called the WTO that sits in Geneva. I don't even know the names of the guys. The U.S. has been often the aggressor in WTO complaints. It sued the European market for banning the import of meat treated with growth hormones and for giving preference to small Caribbean banana companies over two great transnationals. In both cases, the U.S. won the WTO decisions. All of the WTO prohibitions are directed against public authority. All its supranational protections are on behalf of private corporate power. Any public service we have today is potentially open to challenge as an unfair interference with the private market. Anything that goes on. The province of Ontario in Canada was deliberating. They were debating about having a single-payer auto insurance plan in the FTA, or it could be under GATT. Propositions, all of them that apply. Nine private insurance companies in the U.S. sued, took Canada, and said this is an infringement on our market opportunities. This is called lost market opportunities. Any public service that creates lost market opportunities for a private corporation from another country under the guise of free trade, they can sue, and you can have your single payer public insurance, but all you have to do is pay us the market equivalents, each one of these companies, nine times over. So we're compensated for the market we've lost. So the province of Ontario dropped that plan. That's the sovereign democratic right of the people of the province of Ontario to decide their own public services, you see. The goal is to roll back all public services. Under the GATT gun, Denmark imposed a ban on any products imported into the country that were made in whole or part from endangered species. This was overthrown also as a restraint on trade, a lost market opportunity. Selective purchasing laws that some states have are now treated as restrictions on trade. The state of Massachusetts and 30 other cities and states are saying they don't want contracts with companies that do business with various human rights violators, etc. There's a thing, what I call patent imperialism. In India, for thousands of years, the neem tree has been cultivated by hundreds of thousands of Indian farmers. The neem tree is a pharmaceutical wonder. It's used for various treatments. It has a lot of healing and nourishing properties, actually involving, I have it here, I was saying thousands, I couldn't remember, 200,000 farmers in India. Well, the pharmaceutical companies caught wind of it, and they took out a patent on the neem tree, which makes them the monopoly owners. The World Trade Organization protects private corporate patents and ruled in their favor. And now, you Indian farmers who have the neem tree, you now work for us, and you cannot market those products except through us and by us, and we will decide what the terms are and how much you get, and you're going to get very little. Just recently, a corporation in Texas took out a patent on basmati rice. Under the World Trade Organization, the basmati rice now belongs to them. I mean, the whole idea of a thing of nature belonging as a monopoly product to a company because they take out a patent and can appeal to this undemocratic oligarchy sitting up there in Geneva is itself kind of grotesque. People who grew basmati rice for centuries are now committing an illegal act, and they will be dealt with soon. All protective labeling can be outlawed as restraints on trade. Under the guise of free market deregulation, we're getting a global monopoly regulation. When they call this deregulation, when they call this free market, don't believe in the word. It isn't free. The free market, ladies and gentlemen, the free market was never free. It was never free except for the people who had the money. It's a free market if you've got plenty of money to get in on it. But it's not free. It's very much controlled by the people in column A. And the terms are set up to suit their interests. And if you don't believe me, ask the World Trade Organization. What there is then is an anticipatory response, a chilling effect. Increasingly, nations are abandoning their laws, their regulations, their public services and protections at the mere threat of a World Trade Organization challenge. Guatemala sought to restrict the use of infant milk substitutes, which lack the life-saving, full nutritional properties of mother's milk, and babies were just dying in great quantities, so they wanted to get this away. But they were faced with a WTO challenge induced by Gerber baby foods. And faced by that, the Guatemala Supreme Court ruled that the laws do not apply to baby food imports. So the babies will die so that Gerber can keep its market in Guatemala. A Dutch timber label scheme to identify wood produced by ecologically friendly forestry has been scrapped after a threat to take it to the World Trade Organization as a restraint and interference on trade. South Africa is developing more affordable versions of patented AIDS drugs. On behalf of big U.S. drug companies, the Clinton administration is threatening WTO action to stop South African government from marketing drugs for people who desperately need them, which would be affordable for the AIDS victims in South Africa. They don't care if people die. They care if their markets are protected. And that's what Bill Clinton is doing. Bill Clinton is the biggest prostitute that you could ever hope to... I take that back. That's really not correct, not nice to prostitutes. It's a... I really mean that. I mean, a prostitute gives you something for your money. That's not free trade. That's not free trade when you go to South Africa and say, no, you cannot produce those generic drugs. It's so much cheaper. Supposedly, free trade is about producing a better product cheaper. And here you're saying, no, you can't produce them. That's monopoly control through the World Trade Organization. And yet they call it free trade, you see, because it's the government that's doing it. And the government can't be interfering in this stuff. Of the first 100 decisions brought before the World Trade Organization, all 100 were decided in favor of the giant corporations. No wonder there's a chilling effect. Canada banned the gasoline additive, MMT, as a public health risk and a pollutant. MMT is believed to attack the human nervous system. Well, Ethyl Corporation in the United States markets MMT in its gasoline. And they went to the U.S. Trade Representative and they said, let's take this to the World Trade Organization. I think in this case it was a NAFTA thing. And they were suing Canada for $251 million. Well, the Canadian Parliament just caved in. And you can't blame them, as I say. You look, every decision that comes down the pikes goes in favor of the corporations. So rather than paying out $251 million or face sanctions, the Canadians backed down, fearing they would lose the case. They repealed the ban, so MMT is now in the air in Canada. It's in the air here. As you know, there isn't an invisible screen. That air goes all over the globe. And they paid $13 million in damages. They also paid Ethyl's legal costs, which was millions more. And they had to publicly announce that MMT is safe, in direct contradiction of their own environmental agencies and scientists. Now it's turning around. The state of California is banning MMT. I think it's called something different in the states. What is it? MTBE. Thank you very much. MTBE. And a Canadian oil company is now under NAFTA suing and saying this is a restriction, a restraint on trade. And so it's very likely, and I live in California, it's very likely that we will have the opportunity to ingest and breathe in as much MTBE. We're going to have the opportunity to be able to take in as much of that as they want us to. You see, corporate capitalism is a very jealous, insatiable system. It siphons up everything. It has never tolerated a public sector. It gets very uncomfortable at the idea that there are people who can work, create services or products, and other people who consume it, can buy it, the money goes back and all that, without the people in column A getting a fix on this. They really don't like that. They don't like, for instance, public universities. The idea that you can employ people, you can educate people, you can do all this without someone making a profit. They don't like public hospitals. The idea that you can have doctors working, trained, able, patients being helped, the whole system being financed, and nobody's making a profit. We're being shut out of this thing. If you can keep demonstrating things like that, that you can do all sorts of things, you know, public water systems, all sorts of infrastructure things, public libraries. The day may come, you know, when a book cartel like von Holtzbrinck in Germany will sue, if MAI was ever passed, could sue the state of California or Berkeley, California, where I live, for having a public library. It's a lost market opportunity. All those books in there, which are books which people can take out for free, which they would otherwise have to buy from us. So the idea that these things could happen, which demonstrates the utter superfluity, the utter parasitic nature of the people in column A, the idea that those things happen has to be stopped and has to be rolled back and done in. Now, that's not the way, of course, they presented to us. Just want to share this. An article in the Financial Times, September 99, it was an interview with Mike Moore, who happens to be chairman of the World Trade Organization, just appointed head of the World Trade Organization. He's a New Zealander. And it says that Mike Moore is a committed champion of the underdog, the son of a poor New Zealand farming family. He was a social worker and union official before he entered politics and served briefly as Prime Minister of New Zealand. He says he knows what it's like to be struggling and vulnerable. Now listen, forget the class people come from. It, of course, can influence them greatly if they stay loyal to their memories. But look at the class that people are in bed with. These guys always tell you about their poor origins, you know. Well, George Bush couldn't. He was born with a silver spoon. But Richard Nixon never tired of talking about the little drugstore his dad owned in Whittaker, California. Lyndon Johnson talked about the little classroom that he taught those Mexican pupils in back when he was just a school teacher. Ronald Reagan talked about how his dad was unemployed during the Depression. They like to talk about their humble, regular origins, but you got to look at the class they're serving, the class they're working with, not the class they say they came from. Let me go on with the Financial Times, he says. Mr. Moore's social idealism, there's all sorts of quotes about it. I am instinctively on the side of those who get knocked out, who can't get the benefits, who can't engage, all that stuff. He says, his social idealism is as unusual in the stuffy diplomatic environs of the WTO as his chummy, no-nonsense manner. He's just got a regular guy. He eats in the WTO canteen rather than the executive dining room. This obviously, then our interests are perfectly secure, aren't they? By the way, the WTO canteen conjures up an image of formica tables and fluorescent lights and styrofoam cups. The WTO canteen in Geneva has mahogany tables, full glass walls that look out over mountain views and is utterly beautiful. So I would eat there too, probably. He's annoyed about the WTO being increasingly under attack from vociferous and well-organized opponents of globalization. That's us. We're vociferous and well-organized. Well, you know what vociferous? That means getting your voice heard. That means speaking back. That means being an active agent of your own life and interests. And well-organized. You know what? There's another word for that. You know what that's called? That's called democracy. And those guys wouldn't know it if it hit them right in the faces, you know. Mr. Moore declines to spell out a detailed wish list for the Seattle meeting. Let's translate that into honest English. Mr. Moore has a hidden agenda for the Seattle meeting and does not want the vociferous agitators to know what it is. Mr. Moore says many of the WTO critics are good kids. Good kids. I'm 15 years older than this twerp and he's calling me a good kid. He is angered by allegations made by critics that the WTO is undemocratic. Oh, he's angered by allegations. The question is, are the allegations true or not? What worries him is not the often flawed arguments used by the WTO critics, but the growing influence they exert on national governments and parliaments. That, again, should worry him again. That's called democracy. He plans to take on his detractors directly by taking every opportunity to broadcast the message that everybody gains from free trade. Just a really cozy, chuck-under-the-chin, huggy kind of guy, isn't he? I'd like to kick him in the would. Well, you know, It's not all bad news. Look what's happened. Monsanto has been under this free trade thing, pushing their bad seed, you know, maneuvering, dominating the world's supply of seed for staples. What are the things that feed the world's population, the people in column B and C? I mean, 85% of them. Corn, soybeans, potatoes, and wheat. And crops like that, rye and such. Well, Monsanto is getting out the, as you know, this generic engineering has a monopoly on seed, terminal seeds. Farmers won't be able to have seeds. The crop won't bring seeds of its own. There's been such an outrage over this, such an outcry in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, and lately, belatedly now, in that most successfully repressed country of all, the United States. That, you know, Stokely Carmichael once said, he said, the United States is the most repressed country in the world. I was on a panel with him years ago. And someone said, how can you say that? You got death squads in Guatemala. And I said, well, Stokely didn't say, he didn't say it's the most brutally repressed. He said it's the most successfully repressed. Repression, you see, is most successful not when you have to go out and shoot people with guns, but when you've got them convinced by just having them put on the TV and look and say, oh, look at those terrible, oh, I'm so glad our government is doing this or that. That's the repression. And we're the last to hear about it. Repression is when you can get 90% of the high school students in America be able to name the Three Stooges but can't tell you what the WTO is, you know. That's repression. That's successful repression, keeping people in the dark. Well, there's been such an outcry against Monsanto that it looks like the whole process of terminal seed is unraveling. Gerber and Heinz Baby Foods, two leading manufacturers, have announced in July that they would not allow genetically modified corn or soybeans in any of their baby foods. Now, wait a minute. Isn't that the same Gerber you said who was pushing those infant milk formulas on the people in Guatemala? So why were you criticizing them before? Well, why do you think they're doing this? They're not doing this because they suddenly got religion. They're suddenly saying, oh, I'm worried about the people. I'm worried about the food. They're doing this because they're worried about a consumer rebellion, that people are so up in arms that they won't buy their baby food. It's in their own interest. But that's okay. If you can get them to come down on the right side in their own interests, which isn't too often, because our interests are really quite contradictory, then you're winning a real victory. So what's happening with this whole bioengineering thing is it's already unwinding. It's sort of going into Chapter 11. It's going the way of the nuclear industry in this country. Now, that fight took 20 years. This one seems to have taken about 8 or 9 months. It's really hopeful. There are those people who will say to you, well, what do you have, Parenti, a conspiracy theory? I mean, you think this is some conspiracy? These people up there are just trying to manipulate us and do all this control? Do you think there's a group of men sitting around in a room? That image somehow is supposed to be so devastating. Sitting around in a room, I say. Oh, no, no. They meet on carousels, you see, and they talk to each other like that. Say, what should we do about trade opening? How can we stop the World Bank? Or they sometimes skydive. You ever see them grabbing each other's hands and they're going down and they talk about what they're going to do next? Their secret wish list. Of course they meet in rooms. Where the hell else do you think they meet? There are plenty of rooms. There are plenty of rooms in the White House. There are plenty of rooms at the Council for Foreign Relations. There are plenty of rooms at the Trilateral Commission. There are plenty of rooms at the Bohemian Grove. There are plenty of rooms at the Knickerbocker Club in New York. There are plenty of rooms in the State Department, in Langley, Virginia, at the CIA. There's lovely rooms at the Washington Post. There's a dining room every evening. Some editors meet with people from the corporate or governmental world and talk about what's happening. Nobody confabulates. Nobody communicates more often, more frequently, more persistently than the ruling elites and the people who own the land, the labor, and the capital of this country and the whole world. Of course they consciously plan. Of course this system has these dynamics that sustain itself. But no system can automatically sustain itself. Every system needs a conscious element of the owning class, which is called the ruling class, which goes out there and whose job it is to make sure that there's no opposition, to discourage them, to give interviews to the Financial Times and tell them, I'm sick of these people attacking us. We're helping everybody. We're for the little guy. I'm for the little guy. I come from poor origins. That's all they ever do. That's all they ever do. And they know what they're doing. And just because you don't know what they're doing doesn't mean they don't know what they're doing. Let me tell you, conspiracy, consciously pursuing their interests, They don't do anything else but consciously pursue their interests. You consciously pursue your interests. You make calculations about what you're going to do this summer. Should I get a job or this? Should I move somewhere else? What am I going to plan for that? So forth. What makes you think David Rockefeller doesn't do that? Teachers will combine and plan to organize to better their well-being. Nobody says anything. Farmers will organize and try to fight back and pursue, get price supports, do this thing. Nobody says anything. The minute you ascribe conscious intent to the ruling corporate elites who own 80% of the wealth of the world, the minute you ascribe conscious intent to them, somebody says, what, do you got a conspiracy theory? I mean, it's a credible phenomenon when you think about it. Where the hell did it come from? I really don't know, because it's not exactly taught in the schools, necessarily. Although I just heard myself described as a conspiracy theorist in some little review blurb. So I guess it's everywhere. Well, you can call that conspiracy. I call it people pursuing their conscious class interest. The alternative is somnambulist theory, or sleepwalking theory, or coincidence theory. It's just a coincidence. I don't know, stuff just happens, you know. We were all in Uruguay, and like there was this thing, and like we had this agreement, you know. I don't know how it happened, and like it just happens, you know. Yeah, right. And David Rockefeller gets up in the morning and says, what am I going to do today? I'm going to pursue my interest? No, that would be conspiratorial. I won't do that. I'll just la-li-la, float along, and it'll all just... It's remarkable how it really works, you know. Well, what we have to do is keep fighting back, and we have to educate ourselves, organize and agitate, and let them know that this is not going to happen as easily as they think. The people in column B and C have to realize that the people in column A are not in the same boat with them, that they're living off our backs. The nature of political power is such that when you ask, do the people have power? Well, let me tell you, the people are the substance of power. Power can only come from the people. It's like asking, does Saudi Arabia have oil? The oil is there, but others are extracting it and using it for their own purpose. And the people are the very substance of power. And what we have to do is find means of organizing, of withholding our empowering responses, of pressuring and agitating. Oh, they don't care what we think. Oh, don't think that for a moment. They care what you think. They are listening. They're watching all the time. Oh, man, are they watching. You just heard the little scraps I read from you from Mike Moore's interview. Half of what he was saying was concerned about the opposition that's been arising to WTO. They get very worried because they know that they are sitting up on top of that giant pyramid, which is the great corpus of humanity, and maybe with a few good shakes and struggles, we can topple them someday. So the answer then, the secret, the response I have can be summed up in three words: democracy, 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 and let's have more of it. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
That was the second half of a brilliant talk from 1999 by Michael Parenti, Globalization, the New Imperialism. The second in a series of classic Parenti lectures that we are rebroadcasting from time to time. You'll find an archive of all of our shows and other stuff too at our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust for New World Notes. Thank you for listening. You'll get to my non-carborundum, and please tune in again next week. Ciao.